With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This thing on?
See, now I'm getting mad.
Because it's getting ready to be on.
I want my whiskey to bite me a little bit.
This is the kind of psychopath that I hang out with. I got beat up outside of a Denny's.
The Rockpile Report with Buffalo Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer.
He likes to get in the ex's nose. Something I can't do with this podcast because I drink too much.
Chris Kruger.
My rollerblading blonde mohawk producer.
The pettiest, hardest drinking Bills podcast.
I'm an adult. I know what I'm about.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Rockpile Report podcast. I'm sitting here at O'Neill's Stadium Inn. I can see the side of Ralph Wilson Stadium. I guess it's called Highmark, but I'm never going to call it that in my lifetime.
You just did.
See, and I'm sitting here with three of the smarter people I've ever met in podcasting. Joe Miller.
Hi.
John Fina.
Yo.
And Joe Marino.
What's up?
You guys probably know, you probably know them to be far smarter, more intelligent, more well-spoken than anything you've heard on our podcast, which is why I just love getting everybody together out at a bar, having a couple beers, talking a little bit of football.
Drew, I got to stop you right there because you don't get enough credit for what you are within the Buffalo Bills podcasting community. Right, you're the OG, man. You're the guy
pioneer
that did this before anybody else did this.
Pioneer.
And we owe you a debt of gratitude for what you did to pave the way to give people the ideas to do this stuff. So right off the bat, Drew, I want to give you a lot of credit for what you've done. And I know it means a lot to us, and it means a lot to Bills Mafia.
Absolutely.
Well, son of a bitch, I don't know what to say about that, because self-deprecating humor is what I'm best at. Thank you. I appreciate that, man. I really do.
And I'm good at giving you as much as you can tolerate.
My favorite thing about Fina is that he met me, and it took him less than 30 minutes to realize, like, oh, I could talk shit to this guy. And it's been fun since then. I enjoy it. And I like that you're in town. I like that we get together and do these things.
You're kind of an easy target.
Well, yeah, I mean, come on. It's low-hanging fruit. But also thick skin, right? Because you can't be me without being able to take a few. So last time we got together and did this, it was right at the start of training camp. And we were celebrating the contract extension for Josh Allen. And we were talking about camp and everything that was to come. Now we're getting together at the tail end of training camp. It's interesting. I was talking to Joe Marino here before we got started recording earlier today, and we were talking about the dynamic shift. Now, you two were both Joe Miller and Joe Marino, at camp today. And so you got to take in what was the final practice of the week, of camp, really. I remember when I was credentialed for the final practice of Sean McDermott's very first training camp. 2017, I'm standing on the sidelines talking to Sal Capaccio. And as we're sitting here, we're talking about this, and we watch Sean McDermott sit all 90 guys. He just sloppy play, blew the whistles, came out to the middle, made everyone take a knee, and cussed everyone out. Verbally undressed the entire team.
John Fina does that to me every time when we're off the air.
And then later, I undress him for real.
And so, but watch it. I looked at Sal Capaccio and I go, Sal, is this a thing? Like, is this a thing that happens at training camp? And he was scrambling for his notepad going, no, this is, I've never seen this before in my career covering a team. Because it was his way of letting those guys know, listen, we're not the most talented team in the world, but there is a standard of execution that exists here now because I'm the head coach. And I say so. Fast forward to this year, I guarantee you there was none of that, was there?
No, I think one of my biggest takeaways from being at camp Wednesday and Thursday was that this is a well-oiled machine. These guys are focused, they're competitive, they're intense, there's good energy. It's almost like watching a high school practice that first day where everybody's dialed in and they're sprinting from drill to drill. Everybody's very, very focused. Now, there's definitely a lot of personality and guys moving around and dancing and having a good time together, but these guys are competitive, they're focused, and you could tell that there is a real process about the way that they conduct themselves on that practice field. You can feel that watching it, especially because I've been at some other camps this year, and it wasn't like that.
Really? What other camps were you at?
You know, I probably shouldn't have said that, Drew, because I knew you wouldn't just let that go, right? You want to let that go. But I happen to live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and there's a professional football team down there that didn't practice the same way that I watched the Buffalo Bills.
They have the other two 2018 quarterbacks.
Yeah, they – you know, Joe, that's a good point.
How hilarious is it? Like, how funny is that? That, like, I said it, I feel bad because the Carolina Panthers seem like this team that's just snake-bitten.
Yeah.
Into, outside of Cam Newton, when you watch from Dell Home to what they've decided to do at quarterback, they kind of fell into Cam Newton.
Yes, very much
so. Number one overall pick. They rode him for as long as they could, and then afterwards they were like, hey, let's trade for Sam Darnold. Knowing that he needs that fifth-year option. Like, it's a foregone conclusion we're going to get it. And then they act like they have buyer's remorse and try to get rid of it. It's like, no, you can't.
Listen, right. You know what? It's the uniforms. Sorry. It's the curse of shitty uniforms. Hey, those uniforms suck. Sorry, they're just not going to be good. It's like Miami now. I mean, the uniform curse. They're terrible.
Arizona.
But listen, to your point, Joe Marino, about – the difference between that first training camp and now what they're like, right? So losing is a disease. It's a cancer. And you just, you know, when you come in and take over a team, you're not sure where the cancer is, right? What do cancer doctors do? They go to surgery, they find the bad tissue, and they get rid of it, right? They resect it. So he's still in that process, his first year of like, where's the cancer? And I'm going to just go balls to the wall and put pressure on these guys and find the cancers and just get rid of them. And now, what do you have instead? You have a winning program. You have belief, right? These guys believe. So with belief comes fidelity, comes energy, comes commitment. So it just becomes so much easier to go to camp year after year when you feel like you have a chance. And when you're a dog shit football team, you like staring that camp date, that report date on the calendar, and you're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to go. And I don't, you know what? Guys get paid a lot of money, and everybody in the public's like, well, they get paid a lot of money, but, you know, it's the human spirit. And when your spirit is crushed, you know, showing up for anything ain't fun.
Yeah, I think for me, I've been going to camp for probably 14 years, and I think the word for me and Joe and Marino and I talked about it was efficiency. And when you talk about winning, excellence is a big piece of that, right? The reason the Patriots were good for so long was because of the excellence level at which they executed stuff. And that comes from efficiencies, which comes from preparedness. And I don't think you can have that efficiency level that they have in camp unless the guys are required and they know, I've got to be prepared. And I think that's a big difference. I think that those efficiencies happen because the players know it's trickled down, right? We've got to be ready.
John, I'd like to ask you a question because one of the interesting components of that 2017 Bills team that went 9-7, broke the drought, went to the playoffs, nobody expected that to happen, right? Everybody said they were tanking. Well, they tanked their way to the playoffs. How important do you think it was for Sean McDermott that year? You talked about buying and getting players to believe in your messaging, to believe in what you're going to be able to do for them and their career. Like, is it an underrated talking point in the glow-up of this Buffalo Bills team that in year one, they went out and won and set that standard, and you got that buy-in right away, whereas you see some of these other coaches, like look at Brian Daboll with the Giants. Nobody's expecting anything from that team, and they're probably going to win 3-4 games, picking in the top five. Now, those guys probably on that roster won't be part of that solution, but there's going to be some. But how important do you think it was that year that he went out and did everything that they could to win? They had to, you know, make some moves, get some guys out of the way, maybe get rid of some of the cancers. But how much do you think that went in terms of getting that buy-in to set the tone for the future?
Well, it goes a long way, first of all. So to answer your question quickly, yes. But going back to what Joe was saying, Joe Miller, since we had two Joes out here, you know, the efficiency of practice, you know, to know what's coming every day. You know, Marv Levy and Wade Phillips, God damn it, they ran their practices, and we knew – what periods the efficiencies were in place, and you were able to just go to work, no questions asked. You knew what was coming next. You were prepared, and you were able to feel that stability. So you take over a team. It's in disarray, and then you got to decide what kind of a head coach you are, right? I mean, I'm not guessing or casting aspersions here, but it's a pretty nice upgrade to go from a coordinator to a head coach. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have the tools in place to get it done, that you have the desire to get it done. I mean, you can't look at Sean McDermott at any practice or Brandon Bean and say, these guys don't give a shit. I mean, that's laser focus. And when that comes from the top down, it resonates. And players, they just feel it. And they know that there's an expectation there. And they know that they're under the microscope. And that's what the game's all about. I mean, think about it. You got 17 chances to show that you're worth a shit to be asked back the next year. And as a head coach, you want those guys to have that pressure. Great job. So you worked 17 weeks. Arguably, I say you worked 35 weeks. But the pressure is crazy to perform. So if you can maintain that fever pitch from the GM to the head coach to the coordinators down through the position coaches, and you believe and you get the right people in place, it becomes like a good virus, if you will.
Can I ask you a follow-up? And
There will be no follow-up.
This is a rare opportunity. I've got a 10-year starter right here in the NFL, right? There's stuff to get into about this. You hear about I've heard this so many times. The best teams are the ones that have player-driven leadership. How does that correlate with what you just said about that top-down emphasis? What does that mean when the players start taking over that?
So first of all, like as a head coach, you gotta find those guys. And then, you know, sometimes there's individual meetings with your position coach, your OC, the head coach, where they pull you in and say, look, I need you to drive this team, right? I need you to be not just an example on the practice field, but I need you to be a vocal guy, right? So we need a combination of both of those things. And there's a plan to that. You know, it can happen organically when you have guys like Stephon Diggs out there whose give a shit meter, as we were talking about earlier, his give a shit meter is at zero. He don't care. He's going to say it. He's going to drive that team. But in the absence of that, you have to cultivate those players. And you have to you do that by setting the example at leadership level, right? From the GM, from the owner to the GM to the head coach. You have to set that example. You have to drive that example. You have to pick players that you think who can cultivate it in the locker room. But it is huge. Even when we were terrible, I think we were, I don't know, we were 5-11 or 6-10 my last year here. You know, Reuben Brown, vocal leader, John Fina, you know, kind of quiet sword in the locker room. Just, you know, look at guys and just say, get your shit done. Reuben gets the temperature up, right, gets the pulse going. You need guys to fill all those gaps, and you need to identify them, and you put them on a mission. No question about it.
Well, and so to bring that all the way back around, when you look at what the Bills have now, one of the reasons that we're a Super Bowl favorite is because it seems very much like they have that figured out, right? They have leaders at every single level of this football team. In almost every single phase of the game, you can look at the Bills roster and find two or three guys who you go, not only are they leaders like in the locker room, off the field, on the field, on game day, I've got two or three guys at every single position group who I can trust to go out there and lead by example, that are going to go out there and set the tone, that are going to play at a very high level and dare other people to come meet them. That's why we are where we are. And so it's just crazy to think about how we got here from where McDermott started and where he picked this team up. Everybody talks about Josh Allen. Sean McDermott doesn't get nearly enough credit for the job he's done cultivating all of this. So now, as camp's kind of closing out here, we're done, it's over, take a look back at some of the superlatives and some of the individual performances that you saw, that you, Joe, saw, that we all read about. Who, as far as the rookie class, who was the one that stood out to you most, Joe?
I think it's got to be Christian Benford, 6th-round pick out of Villanova. He's getting first-team reps platooning with Kyrie Elam, the first round pick. I mean, do we have a Kyle Williams, John McCargo situation on our hands? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that has to play
out. Did you just bring up John McCargo on my fucking podcast?
Am I done? Is this it for me? Am I out?
Yeah. Get the hook.
Bring in the lefty. I'm out.
Get the shots. Somebody get shots. Somebody just said John McCargo.
Listen, you can drop a name. But look, I think it says a lot that this kid out of Villanova has positioned himself to get first-team reps. Am I predicting today that he's going to be a starter for the Bills or that he'll ever turn into anything meaningful? But it didn't take long for this guy to be getting those opportunities. And maybe that's a little bit of Kyer Elam and the adjustment coming from a press man corner at Florida to not playing a lot of off coverage and really in camp not getting a chance to use some of his best qualities to showcase himself, the best that he has in the past. And there's a curve there. But when you hear about a guy like Christian Benford getting these opportunities, the way that Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott is talking about him, I think that for me is very clearly the biggest surprise.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be said. And I got to go to camp five times, so I got super, super lucky this year to be in attendance five different times. And it was a blast, but for me, it was seeing just the juice and the energy, the flashes from guys like James Cook and Khalil Shakir. And what's interesting about it is, as I'm watching James Cook, I'm looking for the contact balance, right? I'm looking for him getting through the line. Now, obviously, they weren't tackling to the ground necessarily, but it was clear. There's a difference between the way he runs, the way that his speed, the way that he carries himself, versus Devin, who is a confident, borderline dominant, like run NFL graded running back. And then Khalil Shakir is every. I mean, he's got all those crazy highlight catches. And Joe and I were talking about this yesterday. But he also has those weird drops. And all of that showed up at camp. All of it. It was great.
Well, one of the great things that I love about, we talked about it a week or two ago on our podcast, was that everybody loves a rookie who's flashing when there's no pads.
Yeah.
And then the second you introduce contact practices and you put the pads on, what you find out is that those rookies who were really showing off, they shrink a little bit, but it's not their fault. It's because you're in the deep end of the pool with guys who have done this on Sunday. These guys now can get their hands on you, and they can show you the physicality of NFL-caliber football, and it's like the competition gets ratcheted up a notch that these young kids have to acclimate to. So it's not uncommon to see a guy like Khalil Shakir show off for weeks when it's just, hey, right here playing flag football. Second you introduce a little clutch and a little grab, and hey, I can hit you off the line, I can do... You see them kind of fall by the wayside. You don't hear so much about them anymore. You know all about that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. You know, a big thing with going tying this leadership in the locker room back is when I came to Buffalo, it was an old team, long in the tooth, but there was just an expectation. And if you have the right leadership in the locker room, then these guys show up to practice and they know it's not BS. And it's not just at practice, it's before practice in the locker room, after practice. You know, I was fortunate. I had Steve Tasker and Pete Metzelaars and Mark Pike, you know, guys that, you know, whether they ever end up in the Hall of Fame or not, they knew what locker rooms needed to be like. And they knew that when rookies came in, and especially now that the draft is only, seven rounds, right, that they trust in Bean and McDermott and the OCs to get the right guys in the draft, then they come in and then they kind of mold them, you know, by example, vocally, talking to them about what their performance needs to be. So it's really no surprise to me, because they draft on quality people, quality talent, and then they put them in a situation in a locker room with guys that, you know, can let them know what it means to be a Buffalo Bill. And if you have an identity and say, this is who we are, that means something. You know, and when you're a program or a team that's swirling the drain, you can bring rookies in, great players, and they just feel lost, right? Because they're not driven. They don't see and hear the examples that they have to emulate.
We watched 20 years of it.
You did, yeah. And thankfully, I wasn't there. I handed it off.
Yeah, you handed it off.
You know, when I left, I gave you a real shit show that said, hey, I'm out of Western New York. Enjoy my time here.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, bud. Yeah, we appreciate it.
I do what I can.
So for me, I... just reading the reports and seeing who was acclimating and getting talking to some of these guys off air and, you know, DMing with different people who were there at practice every day.
Yeah.
For me, I think I was encouraged by Terrell Bernard, but that's because for me, the floor for that pick started so low. I was just, you can't get mad about a third round pick, but you can. Because I'm looking at the roster and I'm going, we still need a speed wide receiver. Like, we still need another wide receiver. No one knows what's going on with Sanders at the time. Nobody knows what's happening with... They're going to need somebody else. I need a body at wide receiver, and I'm looking at Kelvin Austin coming off the board. I'm looking at Channing Tindall goes after the pick, and I go, we don't have a Sam linebacker. What the hell are we doing here? It just, when I saw them take Terrell Bernard, I'm like, who? And I pull up his draft profile, and I start reading it. The Draft Network, Joe. Because I crib,
ding, ding.
Hey, not gonna lie.
Thank you.
I crib a lot of my draft prep off of your website.
That's why we exist, brother.
So
keep doing.
Thank you. But so I'm looking at this, and I'm like, okay, so he's like Matt Milano in the sense that he's a great off-ball linebacker. His draft profile reads that he's gonna struggle to disengage from blocks because he's not a heavy guy. He's not a big guy. He's lived up thus far through practice to his billing, which is good, because if that's who he was, that's who the team expected him to be when they drafted him and said, hey, we can mold you to be more than that. I think the reason that I'm impressed by that is that when the pads went on, he still kept making plays. When offensive linemen got a shot to get their hands on him, he was still on blitzes. He was coming in, being disruptive. I look at Matt Milano and I say to myself, you're a guy whose cap hit next year is $13 million for a weak side linebacker. It's a lot of money when your quarterback's getting paid $39 million. I mean, the cap's going to go up to about $230, but the Bills are already on the book for $235. So that cap increase isn't going to help us. We're still going to be behind the eight ball monetarily. It would be shrewd, but I'll tell you what, if you hoist a Lombardi here in 2022 and no one gives a crap that you cut Matt Milano to save some cap space...
I would disagree.
Well... Now, I'm a huge fan of Brett Coleman. Brett Coleman comes on our show. We talk about things. He has a man crush on Matt Milano, and he says the reason why is because not just the pass protection stuff. Like, he erased Mark Andrews in that playoff game against Baltimore.
Right.
But the fact that he can play from the back of the back of the front seven box and then come downhill so quickly, and he's instinctive against the run. He never seems to pick the wrong lane when he's trying to, I can't let this guy flow here. I've got to force him to the outside. He's right more often than he's wrong, and that allows him to cheat in pass protection. And it's a rare thing. Nobody can play the weak side linebacker position the way he does.
Sure.
A rookie's not going to have that.
Correct.
I'm interested to watch him develop over the course of this preseason to see what he looks like. He's going to get his opportunities in the preseason again.
Well, they've already announced that he's learning both. So Leslie Frazier has said he's learning both positions.
So he's going to get a lot of this, like, hey, I have to learn how to read and fill.
Right.
If he can step forward in that kind of role over the course of this season, his development's going to be fun for me, because he already showed in camp he belongs. He's played with second team, he's played with first team, and he doesn't look lost. Let's see him in the preseason when it matters,
against another
team. And then let's see it on Sundays this season and see how they decide to roll him in. I mean, Matt Milano's never played a full season, so there may come a time when they have to put him in the lineup. For me, I'm just looking at Terrell Bernard going, if he could show out over the course of his rookie year over time the way Matt Milano did, he had to fight Ramon Humber for a starting job, which I hold that against Sean McDermott till the day I die. Ramon fucking Humber. Is starting.
You got to earn it, Drew. You got to earn it.
I understand that. And I understand the value of this. But so for me, I see that and I go, if he could just develop a little bit, they could choose to be a little shrewd here and save themselves some money. Now, Joe, would that be folly?
Drew, you and I have had similar journeys with the Terrell Bernard pick. And unfortunately for me, my instant reaction to the Terrell Bernard pick was broadcasted for the world to see on YouTube, right? So you guys can check that out, just searching on YouTube. You'll see that. But as I was able to spend time thinking about Terrell Bernard and what he can mean for the Bills' defense, my initial response was, if the Bills drafted a linebacker in the third round, there's clearly a plan that they view this as a developmental starter, but I didn't think Terrell Bernard was the guy that could step in for Tremaine Edmonds, right? Like, there's not a – to me, I don't look at him, get him as a Mike linebacker. I just don't. And so that was my initial issue with it. I was like, what's the path for this guy to get on the field? Well, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, like, you should go back to Carolina. The things that Bean and McDermott did in Carolina, they've replicated a lot of that here, and they should, right? That's why they're in these positions. They had Kuechly. They had Thomas Davis. You know what they still did? They drafted Shaq Thompson in the freaking first round, right?
Yep.
Three first round linebackers.
I remember calling that hat on a hat and saying it was dumb. He was a great player.
Yes. And so what did they do with Shaq Thompson? They used him as an overhang defender, the quote unquote Buffalo nickel.
Yep.
So to me, Terrell Bernard, while he is being trained at multiple spots, to me, this is the Bills' path to playing three linebackers. This is their path to being able to be more versatile with their personnel on defense. The Bills are going to face a lot of rushing offense, right? Not just because Josh Allen's your quarterback and other teams are going to want to run the football because they want to control the clock and keep 17 on the sideline. Like, that's a natural symptom of having Josh Allen as your quarterback. The other side of that is just look at the landscape of the AFC. The entire AFC East run first teams, Patriots, Jets, Dolphins. You have two Shanahan disciples in Belichick who they know their bread and butter is running the football. Even Brady was there. They ran the football. The entire AFC North is about running the football. The AFC South, the two best teams, Titans and Colts, Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor, run the football. And then you want to invite those AFC West teams, the Chiefs and the Chargers, to get out of their stadiums and come play here. Literally.
We can see it out
literally,
the
window.
It's awesome.
We can see the lights. The lights are on.
Fina asked me, he goes, O'Neal's, like when I did, he goes, O'Neal's again. I go, dude, where else can you sit here with the lights off? The lights in the stadium are on and we're looking at it right now. This is the place I came the night Ralph Wilson died. I came and I sat in that parking lot with a lawn chair with beers and security came out. Me and my buddy are sitting out there with a couple six packs of tall boys we got from the gas station in lawn chairs. And they didn't kick us out. The guy got out of his truck and sat and had a beer with us, and we just talked about the team and about Ralph and just all of our mutual uncertainty. And then I found myself here.
Right.
So sitting here looking at it, like, to me, this is, it's catharsis. I like it. Now, John, come on. That has to stir something in you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love looking at the stadium out the open window here. Beautiful Western New York weather, not like Tucson, Arizona, where we'd be like, close the goddamn window, turn the AC down. But I want to talk about what Joe Marino said. Defense, this is the ultimate problem, right? Because if you want to put three linebackers on the field, that third linebacker is basically a large, strong safety.
Yeah.
And I've been saying for years, like, if I came back and played football, the only position that I would never want to be is a linebacker. You got to run like a leopard.
You can't be right. Yeah, yeah.
And you got to fill like a bull.
Well, especially with the RPO game, they literally scheme it so that you can't be right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the worst position on the football field. Being a linebacker in the NFL, there's just no winning. Like, you're always compromised. Like, oh, they expect you to cover like a safety, and now they expect you to fill like on a dive. I just don't know who fits that bill. So I do like what you're saying, though, like, well, you know, we can get three linebackers back onto the field, you know, stop the run, get the ball back into Josh's hands. We'll see. And it goes back to what you said earlier, Drew, about the pads go on. What kind of player are you going to be? I don't know. I know Teddy Bruschi, and I know you know who he is.
Oh, I know who he is.
And if Teddy were standing here right now, you would say,
I'd leave the room. I'd leave the fucking room. I'd climb out this goddamn window.
Well, he came from my alma mater. And you'd look at Teddy and say, really, this guy? But it's instinct. It's what you were saying about Matt Milano, right?
Yes.
Making the right instinctual play, playing the inside shoulder, the outside shoulder. Teddy had that. Teddy had that in spades. I mean, the guy just knew the game. He felt the game. And he could diagnose and react so quickly. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, Terrell Bernard, I like the pick. I like the way he can move. I like his hips. But
we got to see it.
I don't know. Like, where do you play him? I like Milano. I don't get into the cap stuff. I know you guys like that stuff. You're already in, like, 2023 decisions. I'm just trying to get to the goddamn playoffs in January. I don't understand you. Can I not just be a fan this year and talk about, like, this year? You're, like... You're like a year ahead of me right now, and I don't like it.
Okay.
I want to live in the moment.
Okay, so you want to live in the moment? Let me ask you this: What was the most disappointing performance? If there was a player here who disappointed you, we can be candid. Who did you watch and go or hear about and everything you read? You expected to see more out of that person than they gave you over the course of this training camp.
Well,
this year.
Look, I
this year. Who disappointed the most?
That's not a question for me. I live in Arizona, right?
I know it's not.
I thought you were going to go back to last season, and I would have just, you know, I'm sorry, Cody, but you weren't the guy.
Oh, Jesus. No. You know when I decided Cody Ford doesn't need to be a member of this football team? Last year, I had to repay a bet. I had to pay a bet that I made with Greg Thompson of the Cover One podcast because I bet him that Brian Daboll, because I'm not a Brian Daboll fan, which is arguable. It's almost an indefensible thing to say.
Just move on.
I know, because Joe looks like he's about to yell at me.
Just move on.
So I said it, his third quarters suck, and that's going to cost us. And sure enough, in that playoff game, we have a sluggish third quarter, and the Colts are hanging on. And I go, here we go. We're going to lose this playoff game because they win. I need to take Greg Thompson out for a white linen steak dinner. So we go to the Chop House downtown in Buffalo.
And yeah, I remember I didn't get in. My invite got lost in the mail.
Listen, Aaron Quinn piggybacked along with us. And I don't know if any of you know Aaron Quinn outside of podcasting. He's like a real life version of Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Really?
He's full of foibles and he always has a problem with something. He's like, well, I don't know what to wear. I don't have dress shoes. I'm a stay-at-home dad. I don't know what you guys want. So we told him, listen, some white New Balance. It was a whole day-long saga that resulted in wear a sport coat and some white New Balances. As long as you wear a button-down shirt and tuck it in, no one will say a damn thing to you. So he gets there after this whole day of agonizing over this, and come to find out, Cody Ford walks past us while we're standing outside in the parking lot. He's coming into a white linen steak dinner with gray sweatpants.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gray sweatpants, a red T-shirt, and a gigantic chain on.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw him, and I go, if that's how you go out to a steak dinner, I don't want you on my football team. I'm sorry.
You're probably misjudging a little bit. I don't think that's the way he plays football.
But the funniest part is, Aaron goes, what the fuck? He can wear sweatpants. Why can't I? I go, they know his paycheck. They know how much he makes. They're not going to kick him out.
True story. So the question was, who disappointed the most in camp? So, Joe, I don't know how much you saw as far as that goes. I think for me, the most disappointed, I don't know that I was disappointed in a player more than the last day of camp. And a ball gets thrown in the direction of Gabriel Davis. Yeah. And Gabriel Davis, the coverage was tight. The ball gets deflected. Micah Hyde makes an incredible, and this has not been reported on anywhere. Have you seen it reported on?
I did a full breakdown on Lockdown.
Outside of you, I'm saying like the media guys, the beat guys, I don't think I saw anybody report on it. But the ball gets tipped. Micah Hyde makes an incredible play on the ball, intercepts the ball in the end zone, gets up and starts sprinting down the sideline. Gabriel Davis takes chase and then shoves him in the back out of bounds about as hard as he possibly can. And then Micah, a leader on the team, chucks the football at Gabriel Davis's helmet and connects. I mean, it was so for me, if I was most disappointed, and Joe and I both had the same reaction, it was just like, this ain't good.
Okay, now you say this ain't good. John, our resident football player here who's been in these types of situations before, is this a symptom of you've been at camp for a couple weeks and everybody's making plays and you're just ready to go hit somebody else? Or is this a problem?
First of all, I just can't get over the fact that camp is only a couple weeks.
Yeah, right?
Well, if you're that wound up after a couple of weeks, and come on, please. In Rochester, at St. John Fisher, you're wound up? Forget it. Look, I don't have a problem with this. I don't care. I mean, guys have a bad moment. They throw a ball. You know what? I always say it's not a successful camp unless there's a fight. And
we've held, and this one was a great camp.
And I'm okay with it, you know. And that's an opportunity for Micah Hyde to go back to Gabe David and say, dude, you absolutely effed the dog on this one. And then you're coming after me.
It wasn't about the fight. It wasn't about that. It was more about, it was the shove. It was about the fact that Jordan Poyer's hurt. Mike is coming off of an injury, and he's the one of the best players on the defense, and you're just shoving the guy, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, these guys aren't made of glass. I'm sorry.
Well, that's it.
You know what? You could take a shove. I'm sorry. I'm still trying to figure out why the horse collar tackle became illegal. Like, was there a rash of injuries from the horse collar?
A bunch of broken legs.
There were broken legs? Well, okay. I guess
he's hand fighting. Literally, John Fina's hand fighting.
So a bunch of broken legs that culminated in Terrell Owens. So Terrell Owens was the final straw.
So that's the Terrell Owens horse collar. I don't know.
It's the tuck rule for wide receivers.
Yeah, you know, my son plays at UCLA, right? And I was like, you guys do any two-a-days? And they're like, no, Dad, those are illegal. And I'm like, well, how do you find out who's tough anymore?
See,
I mean, where's the blood on the goddamn grass anymore, or plastic anymore? You know, I'm just, and I think overall it's a good thing, but also, you know, it's the crucible. So that's a kind of a crucible moment. You know, maybe it was a bad decision. I
guess I was hoping for more positivity when it comes to O.J. Howard.
Yeah, agreed.
As the tight end, too, and we have all romanticized about more 12 personnel and two tight end sets, and O.J. Howard's going to – it's all going to click in Buffalo. Well, I don't think we've gotten that vibe yet. Yeah. You watch practice, and you know him and Dawson Knox are doing their own thing while Tommy Sweeney and Quentin Morris and Jalen Widermeyer are all doing teams. So, like, there's definitely this – belief that you could come away with by watching practice to think that he is the tight end too, but I just wish that there was a little bit more positivity when it comes to OJ.
So OJ Howard's funny to me because one of the first things I actually, the first place I read it, I'll give him credit. Yeah, it was Matt Perino wrote about just an innocuous throwaway comment in his 10, you know, hey, 10 things about today. It was one of the like third practices.
It was like, no, that was from like OTAs.
OTAs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Well, and he mentioned that he didn't look, he's like, I expected him to look less robotic. Yeah. I expected him to look more like a fluid tight end. So then
perfect
camp,
word, fluid.
So then camp started and he brought it back like day two or day three of camp and was like, still waiting to see something from OJ Howard. I'm not seeing any pop. I'm not seeing anything that makes him look special when he... And I always thought that that was a little overblown because I guess a couple things. One, if O.J. Howard was that special of a tight end that he was a fluid athlete in space and he was a big physical guy, Tampa wouldn't have let him walk the way that they did. They would have done a little bit more to retain him than let him go for a one-year, $4 million contract. His injuries have probably robbed him of some of what he could have developed into coming out of college. But even then, when I go, I'm an Alabama fan, and my friends make fun of me mercilessly about this. Because they're like, oh, you're a bandwagoner. Turns out I just was like, oh, that team, my buddy was a huge fan, and their coach just got suspended for some, like, scandal. All right, well, this team's going to suck.
Shula.
I don't mind jumping on the bandwagon for this team. And then they hired Nick Saban, and the rest is history.
Right.
But the thing was, he won more with size. He was just bigger than everybody. And it's like when you're talking about collegiate DBs and collegiate safeties, you can outclass some of those guys easily if you're just bigger and more physical.
What I would tell you about O.J. Howard, and I said this to Joe when he got the camp on Wednesday, is because we talked about O.J. Howard, there was one play that I remember of the camps that I went to where he was wide open running, streaking across the field, had the ball, and it just looked lumbering. It didn't look, you used the word fluid. More importantly than that, and this is not to say that somehow Tommy Sweeney has a bead to make this roster, Tommy Sweeney had a better catch, a better moment, a better highlight than anything I saw from O.J. Howard in 5 days. Did you see anything from him in 2 days?
Caught one pass across the middle, but nothing on the field. But I think it does matter that he was that guy that wasn't doing teams, that was off to the side with Dawson Knox. Like, I'm at Panthers camp a couple weeks ago, and it's DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, their top two receivers, while all the other receivers are doing special teams. They're on a different field doing their own thing. Like, the signs are clearly there that they view him as a tight end too. I just wish that there was a little bit more tangible evidence of that being a good thing.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, you know, the plan in camp is not always the plan you leave with, right? Plan going into
this
camp.
This is fair.
Right?
This is fair.
I don't know. I look at this is the Dawson Knox tight end offense, right? So you would, in my opinion, you're looking for, if you're going to that personnel with two tights, you know, you got to have a guy that can block. So whether he can catch the ball or not, they're gonna put him in a situation where he's not going to be a primary receiver.
No.
Right? So he's going to be leaking out. He's going to be leaking out late in the play, getting open, finding a soft spot. But to me, his value is going to be, can he block? Can he add more to the balanced running game? That's really what I need to see.
John, let me tell you this. I said this in our podcast a week or two ago. You know who our backup tight end was last year, our TE2? Was Tommy fucking Doyle. Your offensive lineman played more second tight end than an actual tight end. Because they didn't have anybody last year. They knew that. They knew what their depth chart was. And they leaned on a guy who could run block. Great. Wonderful. I bet you dollars to donuts if you put Tommy Doyle and O.J. Howard out there up against a jugs machine, one of them can catch more balls than the other guy. If this was the plan last year for tight end two and our offense was what it was, it almost has to be more efficient with O.J. Howard out there as tight end two. So I get some of the hand-wringing about him, but also in the red zone, by default, he's a better option than anything we had last year, and our offense was pretty fucking good in the red zone.
To John's point, I do think that my favorite thing about O.J. Howard coming out of Alabama was his run blocking.
Yes.
Like, he's a good blocker.
He will block.
Right. And let's be real. We're talking 30 to 45 targets probably for the
yes.
tight end, too.
Nothing so, huge.
So I do appreciate kind of coming full circle here, and let's not major in minoring, right? Like, he's going to block. He's going to
yes.
give him that versatility with the personnel groupings to provide that blocking role, and that allows Dawson to be more detached from the formation and move him around and create some of those mismatches that he can create with his size and athleticism.
Yeah, and he's going to sneak out once in a while, right, and to surprise somebody that isn't expecting it.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's what I'm talking about. So, you know, he can be – he'll be the guy that finds a soft spot in the defense when things break down a little bit, right? So he's going to just leak right into that shallow spot behind the defensive line in front of the dropping linebackers, and he's just going to get this nice, soft little pitch.
That's it. That's what you're looking for. And if that's all he is, that's okay.
But you have to remember, too, like the defense has to account for him when he's on the field, whereas Tommy Doyle – you know, you're not really saying, oh, there's two tight ends on the field. This guy's primarily a blocker. He might get lost in space. They might run a play that, you know, is designed to get him the ball, like a gimmick, if you will.
But it also helps you not tip your hand.
But if you're the defense, you have to plan when there's two
yes.
tight ends on the field, whether you respect his ability to run or if he lumbers a little bit, you still have to say, you know, he's better than a backup offensive lineman.
Everybody leaves camp with a feel-good moment, something that they saw over the course of those weeks that made them feel like, okay, our team might – not everybody, because there's something here coming out of the break that we're going to talk about. Not everybody, not for every franchise, gets to leave camp with a feel-good moment. For the Buffalo Bills, what was yours, Joe?
I'll tell you what, for me, it was the Bills finally getting their offensive line healthy, right?
Yes.
Roger
yeah.
Saffold
yeah.
off the NFI list. He's playing left guard. Ryan Bates is healthy. Spencer Brown's taking first-team reps and doing one-on-ones, 11-on-11. So we started camp with just this mismatched offensive line. We ended camp with what we believe the preferred five starters are, getting that opportunity to work together and come together as a unit.
Yeah, for me, I would agree with Joe. I mean, the offensive line is a big part of that. And just knowing what they looked like the first couple days in pads, and it was not good. Josh Allen constantly sacked, never had a pocket. There was one highlight that came out on Twitter where Josh Allen was basically had a huge pocket. It was the first time I had seen – I wasn't at camp that day. The first time I had seen him with like a pocket to throw from. For me, it's the continued depth of the wide receivers. Like there's this wide receiver group, I tweeted it, I think, the second or third camp that I went to. This is a group that can make contested catches. So we went for so many years with guys that weren't number one wide receivers. We didn't really have one on this team, but they, like, if anybody got near them, they couldn't even make a catch, to literally cornerbacks hanging on wide receivers and wide receivers making contested catch after contested catch after contested catch. So for me, there's an aspect of knowing who Josh is and that he's a guy that puts the ball on a player, that he's going to put a ball on the player and the player's going to catch the football.
Since time immemorial, defenses start better at camp than offenses.
Not last year.
Just the way it goes, man. Last year might be an anomaly. I promise you, it's that way every camp I've ever been to. And I'm talking, I was at camp with Jim Kelly, Andre Reed, Thurman Thomas, the list of legends, right? And the defense would come out every year and vex us for 2 to 4 days, and then you'd find your rhythm. It's just the way it goes.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And so we are back, and we're here changing gears, talking about the preseason. Now, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've heard your feedback. I've gotten some emails. My friends bust my balls all the time. That's the type of relationships I think that you have to have. If you don't break balls, you're not really friends. Some people close to me have said, Drew, it seems like you're mailing it in this offseason. And I'm not going to lie to you. There is a part of me that, Joe, you are
guilty.
A guy.
This Joe is guilty.
Here's what I'll say. You canceled your fucking show. You didn't even do one.
For a month. Only a month.
Fina, you took the summer off like a lazy teacher.
He took the whole off season off.
Like a public school teacher, you took the summer
the
off.
The summer wind came blowing in from across Rich Stadium. I lingered there and sat on my ass and listened to your bullshit.
And Joe was still out here just chopping wood every fucking day.
5 days a week.
Every day, 5 days
a week. 8 days a week.
So
your team every day, baby. We do it.
So this is the thing for me. You're talking about a guy. I've got two kids. I'm selling my house. I'm buying a new house. Yeah. My whole life is just a fucking whirlwind.
Do you need a good agent? Because I know John Spascheck from The Market Dominator.
The Market Dominator. He is the host of the Overreaction podcast.
The host?
He's the host. Host.
Jesus Christ, the sponsor. The beers, folks.
I'm the co-host. So, I'm the coast host. Joe does all the work. I sit on my ass and say, hey, are we going to start this goddamn thing?
So, with that said, I think for me, the thing was always camp is nice, but this year there's so little at stake. We know what this football team is. We know who the key players are. We know there's a handful of battles. It's letting them get the, they need it.
Bro, I'd stay the fuck away from you. Can I say that?
No, I see Joe's face.
I'll tell you, like, whoa, man. Hey, you don't talk like that. Yeah, you don't talk. Like that, resting on my laurels.
That's rat poison, you Alabama fan. What are you doing,
cash in my wallet? Damn.
So for
you're,
me,
you know what? You're like a pariah.
Yep. Oh, dude.
Hell no.
In every
I got three words for you. Hell no. You can't even let that thinking creep into your ears. That's why you're sitting here, though.
The moment the alcohol hit.
Yep. So this is what I love. We're finally here at the preseason where they're going to put pads on, hit guys who aren't wearing their jersey, and they're actually going to start playing the game of football to figure out who needs to be on this roster and who doesn't.
In less than 24 hours.
So tomorrow, like if you're listening to this tonight, you're going to download it tomorrow because you're sick fucks, and for some reason you enjoy listening to me talk about this horse shit every single week, which I love you guys to death. We're talking about the preseason. Now, quickly, unit you feel the best and the worst about going into the preseason?
The unit?
Which unit do you feel best and worst about? Finishing camp, you felt the best about the wide receivers.
No, I said that I don't. It wasn't the best, what I felt best about. I think it was one of the things I was most excited about. I remember what the question was that you asked. How can you not feel best about the quarterback group, right? I mean, okay. It's Josh Allen, but that isn't fair. I don't think that's,
no,
I don't think that's
what you're
asking.
That's low-hanging fruit, no.
Yeah, super low-hanging.
Who do you feel good about as a unit on this football team?
It's
going to
be the defensive line for me. I'm really excited to see the energy that this defensive line, this revamped defensive line brings as far as with Daquan Jones, Tim Settle, what Ed Oliver can do with a guy that's not half interested next to him in a Star Latulele, along with Von Miller on the outside, and then what Von Miller does for Greg Rousseau. And it's funny because I believe it was Wednesday. I've got a picture of Von Miller standing there with Rousseau, and I believe he was with Boogie Basham, or it was AJ Epinesa, but he was coaching him up. Like they're out there on the field practicing, and Von is off to the side with those two guys, basically just running through shoulder movements, hip movements, and things like that. So for me, it's the defensive line.
Joe?
Oh, man, I had a lot of time to think about this, and I wish I settled on something that I absolutely love because I want to say safety. I mean, Poyer and Hyde, I mean, could you be more confident in knowing what you're getting out of two players?
I like DeMar Hamlin and Jaquan Johnson
right, like
as well.
The depth is there, and Josh Thomas is interesting, and Nick McLeod's getting cross-chained. If Poyer didn't have the elbow thing, which we don't think is going to put him in jeopardy for week one, like, it's a slam dunk. And so I'm going to go with it. Like, I have just total confidence not only in Poyer and Hyde, but in the resume that Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier have coaching DBs and safeties, and just they always get it right. So I'm going to go with safety.
But what was your least confident?
Least do you want me to talk about punt returners? I mean, because I can. I mean,
that's not a really
listen,
a position.
If I have to talk about punt returners one more time, I'll put a gun in my mouth. Me and Nate Geary.
Let's talk about punt returners. What's the price of admission on that?
This is what I love about John Fina, folks. He's
damn it, Joe! I told you to get my filter.
I fucking love it. For me, I guess I enjoy the idea, to your point, the defensive line, and just seeing what they are from a depth, because your depth players are the ones who play in the preseason. I want to see whether these young kids are as good as advertised, because there's a lot of pressure riding on the third and fourth defensive ends on this football team entering this season. The fifth defensive end, sixth defensive end, if some of these guys falter, if A.J. Epenesa has a shit preseason, and somebody steps forward and starts flashing, I don't think they cut him, but I think that you could see him enter the season with a diminished role. I think he could absolutely play into how this goes.
The problem is the next guy is Mike Love.
And well,
so there's nobody that's going to be
but
jumping
this is my
up
point.
In front
so
of AJ Epenesa.
So we need to
see. You don't
see,
love that?
So we need well to played. See it. The thing that worries me, you mentioned some of this, Joe Miller, the offensive line. Our starters have had zero continuity with each other, and what we saw from our backups wasn't promising during camp. There was a lot of miscues. Bobby fucking Hart was getting time with the ones. That tells you that things have come off the rails. You don't get to play for my – it's like Cody Ford.
At guard.
Okay. If anybody did not catch the Humpty Hotline on Wednesday, Jay Spencer King literally said, I don't need Bobby Hart like having New York State taxes taken out of his paycheck. That's where he was at with the whole thing. He's like, can we just not have him on our football team?
Just like Cody Ford, you wear sweatpants to a steakhouse in front of me, you're cut. Flat earthers, if you believe the earth is flat, you're off my fucking football team. I just don't need you.
Where are we going with this?
Bobby Hart's Twitter account's weird. That's what he's telling you. It's really weird.
All right, hey, all right. Because I know you want to close it out like before midnight. I don't know. Maybe you don't. I'd like to see the offensive line play better. I mean, yes. Josh made them look good last year. I think they played well. I'd like them to play a little weller, right? So I don't want Josh to – I'd like Josh to save them 50% as much this year as he did the previous.
Okay.
That's fair.
I'll die on this hill. If we played better as a front four last year on defense, we'd have gone to the big game. We might have won it. That, to me, you guys are optimistic about it. I'm waiting for the proof. I'm waiting for the pudding to solidify a little bit here or congeal, whatever adjective you want to use when you're making pudding. But if we can get four to play, like really effing play, then this team is a contender. Because Josh can make the offensive line look better when they're a little soft, but we cannot come soft as a defensive front four. And that was it. Sorry.
No.
You're 100% and not having correct. Been there, I can't say who looked great or who didn't look great, but I'm a trench guy. I'm always watching the trench, more from the front on defense and a little bit better on the offensive line, and we got a shot.
Lightning round. Let's go around the table as we close this out. Who has the most to gain? Who has the most to lose? Joe Miller?
No preparation. Who has the most to gain? Who has the most to lose?
In the preseason?
In the preseason.
Who has the most to gain?
When the pads come on, who has the most to gain?
Isaiah Hodgins has the most to prove. They've given him every opportunity to make this football team in so far in camp from what I've seen, to the point of a guy that has not played special teams practice-wise in his first two seasons is now – we saw him in every position almost from other than kicker and punter or long snapper in – on special teams, but he also played the X, he played the Y, he played the slot. So he's got the most to gain, in my opinion, in a very, very crowded wide receiver room. Who has the most to lose? It's got to be Keir Elam, right?
I mean, I can understand why you would say that. I don't think we're going to write the book on Keir, whether or not, like, if he's the week one starter across from Dane or Tre'Davious, whatever, he's ready to go. Like, I don't know how much we should put into that.
But. Said the guy that brought up John McCargo.
Yeah, you brought up John McCargo, dude. I didn't
realize how much of a sin that was. Like, I didn't realize the nerves that was going to strike. I mean, come on,
dude. Terrell Troop wasn't his fault. John McCargo, that's
you're
going
to have to let this go.
Terrell Troop.
For the rest of the podcast, which is like 30 seconds, let it go.
Most to gain, Nick McLeod. Playing corner, outside, inside, safety. He can really prove a lot of versatility in game situations. That's going to matter. Most to lose, Matt Hawk. You know what I mean? Like, this guy's very much in danger of not getting those New York State taxes deducted from his paycheck.
Thanks for skipping over me.
That, well,
yeah, you were about to skip.
You're standing up. You look like you're about to walk out of here, but maybe just you're
my
old.
My ass has
your
been on a plane for like 14 hours to get here to get abused by you.
Because you're old.
So let
and
me
your
give you a little. Let me give you a little abuse here. All right, if you're not walking in to camp every year thinking you're the guy that's got the most to lose, then you got the wrong attitude. Because you're proving yourself every GD rep when you're out there. Like, I'll say the F word and I won't say goddamn. What's wrong with me?
I do like that. I do like that about you.
So, listen, they've all got the most to lose. And if you don't think that way, it's just like, you know, like, oh, this team's, oh, we're golden. No, that's not the attitude.
I don't think that we're golden. I'm just too tired.
That's the attitude you got to have. Everybody's got to have that feeling like someone's coming after you. They brought guys in to beat me out a couple, three times in my career. That was legitimately why Mo Elowanibi was here. Like, we want you to push this guy.
All right.
And that's the way it goes. And I'm the incumbent.
Yep.
And you can't walk into training camp thinking, yeah, I'm just going to breeze through this thing. Number one, if you give a half-speed rep, you're looking at injury, right?
Yep.
Number two, if you don't think that guy is hungry, that's probably because you're not hungry. So got to be hungry.
All right. I like that.
That's it. Mic drop.
So my answer would be, first of all, most to gain is Tavon Austin. I mean, let's talk about Tavon Austin for a second. 6 years ago, best season of his entire career, over 100 targets. He only turned it into 500 yards. He had a catch percentage of just 56%. He's not an offensive producer. He just isn't. And now he's 6 years older. He's 32 years old. The book is closed on him being an asset to an NFL offense.
Yeah, he's looking to connect. He's looking to collect his retirement paycheck.
But he has now been inserted as the first string punt returner for the Buffalo Bills.
Per a depth chart
that is very fluid.
That you can wipe your ass with.
And the thing is, the guy behind you is a rookie who the team has already, I mean, based on the amount of teams and all the chatter about how everyone was high on Khalil Shakir, everyone was mad that the Bills landed him. There will, if you can't practice squad that guy. If you do, there will be teams on his doorstep the next morning.
He's a roster lock.
So with that said, you have to go up against a roster lock and prove that you can do something he can't. That you do something so special in this one facet of the game where you might be able to prove yourself that they can't get rid of you. He has the most to gain from anybody because he could go from being number one on the punt return preseason depth chart to being unemployed in one game. He muffs a punt. He fumbles. He has a bad game. He's got to be not just sharp, but he's got to be impact.
His legitimate roster options at this point are potentially making this football team as a specialist.
Yes.
Or being one of the first five cuts.
And that's because he's not a gunner.
Right.
He's not a coverage guy. He's either you field punts or you're not in the NFL this year. Everything's on the line for that guy, and I hope he comes out swinging. The most to lose, I think, is the defensive back group, because we talked about it a couple weeks ago during our podcast. During his introductory press conference for camp, Bean said, he was asked about the veteran market for cornerbacks, and he said, well, I want to see how this plays out first. Now, they've given, to your point, Benford, gotten run with the ones, Joe.
Yep.
And Kyer Elam, he's had his ups and downs throughout training camp. Now the pads are going to go on, and they're going to play against a team who's not game planning, right? Nobody's game planning at this point, but a team that's trying to put up points, and they're going to try to embarrass you if they can. Depending on how our trio of young cornerbacks, Elam, Benford, Elam's a lock, obviously. Benford, I don't know if they'd practice squad him, but
was there Cam Lewis? I didn't see much of Cam Lewis.
No,
Cam
he sizzled Lewis. A lot, yeah.
So the reality is that this defensive back group as a whole, especially the cornerbacks, if you guys don't show out in the first week, I guarantee you, Brandon Bean is already starting to back channel. And if in week two, it's not improved, they're probably making a move to bring in what they'll probably find the cap space somewhere, which might mean a casualty we don't see coming, some restructures. he'll find a way to get a guy in here if he doesn't think that this room needs one more body who can play on Sundays, if he doesn't see it from these guys. And one, two, maybe three of them are losing their jobs. I think that that group has the most to lose, not just in terms of numbers, but in terms of cachet, their NFL futures. Guys, this is hilarious. Hey, what's going on? I love that people walk in the bar and they're like, wait, wait, what's going on here? Guys with headphones, microphones, is that a football player? Holy shit. Joe, I appreciate you sitting in with us on short notice. Dude, you just fucking showed up here.
I just came to have a beverage and, you know, hang out with some friends, man. It's been a pleasure. Well, it's been awesome.
Why don't you plug your shit? Tell everybody where they can find you. What do you got? What do you have coming up this week? Since you're a fucking workaholic in the podcast game,
a daily podcast on the Buffalo Bills, Locked On Bills, free and available to you on all platforms, including YouTube. Got the book, Go Bills. It's dropped. Like it's
with
gonna
John's
be
ass. The book with John.
John Cena is on the cover. There it is, man.
Oh!
Imagine not being here for this moment. Imagine not being here.
As he slaps his left ass cheek.
Go Bills. You can buy it at buffalobillsbook.com. It's going to be it's going to ship this month.
Wow.
So I literally cannot wait for everyone to get that. And, of course, on Twitter at TheJoeMarino, TheDraftNetwork.com.
Not nearly as impressive. You can find me on Twitter, at John Fina. I guess Instagram, if I ever open it, at John Fina 70. And you know what? I'm on the Off Tackle with John Fina podcast with my man, the legend, Joe Miller. He's the host. I am the coast host. I don't do anything. I just show up. Joe plans it all, leads it all. And, man, I'm telling you, we have a fun time, don't we, Joe?
We do. It's a blast. So, and I clearly have, you know, my primary show is the Overreaction Postgame Show, which literally will debut on Saturday after this first preseason game for the season. And then the Off Tackle with John Fina Show, and then the Humpty Hotline with Jay Spence the King on Wednesday nights. So all live on YouTube, 8 p.m. Yeah, be there, be square.
Guys, this has been so much fun, and I appreciate that no matter what happens, you guys somehow indulge me on this nonsense every single time.
Perfect word.
You indulge me on this nonsense.
You're the OG, Drew.
I just...
The OG. You're the Mel Kiper. Mel Kiper is to draft coverage to what Drew Greer is to Buffalo Bills podcasting, sir. Thank you for what you've done.
And thank God I only have to do it once a year, for Christ's sakes.
This is what I love about this. It's ball busting. It's camaraderie. It's getting to talk to people incredibly smarter about football than I am. And it's about
not
getting,
me.
It's about getting to drink beer and hang out and talk about something we all love. He's flexing at me with biceps small. John Fina's biceps are smaller than mine. I think I finally made it. Oh, I can't wait for the. Oh, we're gonna measure as soon as we end this podcast, guys. Thank you so much.
We aren't measuring.
Yeah, we're not measuring. No, what I love is I think my wingspan is almost similar to John's.
No, it's not. He's got an 80-inch wingspan. You're not close. You're not close.
We'll see.
You're not close.
Guys, I can't wait. We're going to get the hell out of here for tonight. I'm Drew Geer. This has been just a – this is Joe Miller. That's John Fina. That's
Joe Marino.
That's Joe Marino.
Guys being dudes.
I literally almost said Joe Miller again. But I'll tell you what. You two both have the best voices for podcasts.
You're welcome.
Nothing to Joe Miller.
Okay.
His voice is real. I have to, like, get in character. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
You have to get in character.
I got to do my podcast voice when I'm on with Joe.
Hey, before we leave,
wait,
can you serenade us?
I got to do... Girl.
Can you serenade know. Us on the way out?
Absolutely not.
He's already sang a few times on this.
He sang Frank Sinatra. I don't know what more you want from the man.
Fucking hilarious. Guys, we're going to go drink some beer. We'll talk to you later.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.